He doesn't sound like a nerd,
but the computers are still scared of him. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
There's a bunch in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. On the IT Pro series, why does it take so long for some tech issues to get resolved? On the Scam series, Jane asks me, why is her grandmother suddenly getting so many scam calls? Marty is going to talk about prepping for and surrendering to the Windows 10 to Windows 11 upgrade. Steve Kesky, well, we're going to talk about the information superhighway. I've got listener questions, more of them. Lily asks, why do websites keep asking me to prove I'm not a robot? Savannah, how do streaming services deliver even during high volume? I'm also going to tell you, don't let your tech failures define you. And of course, this week was WWDC, the big, huge Apple event of the year. And Keith Emcedor and I are going to be talking about that for a couple of segments, the next two segments here on Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. And that's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. You can also check out the podcast in case you miss any of those different items. This is definitely one of the best ways to reach us. Again, ComputerTalkRadio.com. But of course, I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns at my phone number, toll free 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-637-3888. Diving into the news from the past week, Apple's WWDC 25 coverage, which we're going to cover again in a couple of minutes here, the next two segments, they had less focus on Apple intelligence. I mean, they still had some, but they've kind of dialed it back. And I think part of that came from a recent study that CNET ran, but also I think a lot of other people are noticing that smartphone owners are resisting the idea of upgrading because of AI. How many? 11% are interested in AI. Adding on to this, 3 in 10 didn't find mobile AI to even be helpful, and they don't really care to see more new features. This echoes my own observations, that of Keith, where people want something more than a vague reference to something that doesn't deliver as well as they think it should. Price, battery, and storage. Those are the top three concerns for buyers. Cameras falling into fourth place. But it's not likely that Apple, Samsung, or the rest are going to address that biggest one, the price. And it's unfortunate. But yeah, I think we're stuck with the high-priced smartphones for quite a while. Now, United Natural Foods, they are a distributor of, yeah, you guessed it, food. They are, in fact, actually the largest distributor of natural products in the United States. They are the primary distributor to Whole Foods, which is owned by Amazon. And that actually covers a third of their products. UNFI also covers many of the other grocery stores across the country. They've been hit by a cyber attack. They're also warning of disruption downstream due to shutting down all of their computers on Tuesday and a lot of the rest of the stuff that's been going on with this cyber attack. This reportedly has started to already impact the stores, as one might imagine. And it's hard to say that this big, huge cyber attack is an example of the world we live in, whether it is a lucky strike or a targeted effort. But I'm going to note that it is very important for us to always have enough food on hand for at least a week. And that should be a priority concern for all of us. Every household, you should have, like, you don't have to go all kinds of crazy on this, but you should have a variety of good shelf-stable foods on hand all the time. The stuff to make bread, stuff to make some basic staples in life. And on that hacker front, the cyber attackers there, I've seen fake recruiters. They have infected LinkedIn and the rest of the job boards as people are struggling to make a living, trying to find a new job, trying to get a job. We've seen other bad actors flood the job world with AI-crafted resumes in order to get any job that they can hold down for a matter of a few months until their fraud is found. Taking a lead from that, others have found that they can deliver ideal candidates to get the click-through. But what they want to do there is they want to actually deliver malware instead of actual real workers. They're creating fake accounts on LinkedIn. They're disrupting the inbox of human resource executives. And they're creating fake websites, all seeking to take the unsuspecting down for more ill-gotten gains. That's not good. This is a direction we should not be going in. But unfortunately, it's how things kind of roll at times. Now, chess. I love to play chess, and it has actually long been held as a key factor in determining the processing, or really the thinking power, if you will, of computer systems. Some of the latest news has been ChatGPT beating some of the best in chess out there. And that's a concerning thing that gives us a gauge there. But now picture that same ChatGPT going up against tech from 1979, specifically the Atari 2600 in the 1979 video chess game. A tech out there decided to pit the two against each other, ChatGPT versus the 1979 chess game. And he wanted to set up a match, and he did. And yet ChatGPT couldn't hold its own against the ages-old system that many played at home in the early 80s. Now, there was a caveat in a couple of places. I think people are defending ChatGPT here. And they note that ChatGPT is a large language model. It's really designed to communicate with you and I in plain English. It's not really built to compete in the chess world. There are other various forms of AI, various programs that are set up out there that are specifically geared toward the chess world and competing in chess. Still, I find it very telling how this ages-old test of skills, strategy, and thinking could suffer so badly against a system that's been around since before Ronald Reagan was president. Now, Microsoft, they have this drive to shift everyone off of Windows 10. We've been hearing about this, and they've been going at various different approaches to try to encourage us to go to Windows 11, including, if need be, buying a new computer. Now it's starting to smell of desperation. They seem to no longer be content to allure us with new features or entice us with something exciting. Instead, on the very week when Apple, which again, we'll be talking about that soon enough, when Apple was touting the new, Microsoft launched a campaign built on fear, specifically calling us, the viewers of this ad, to, quote, stay on the right side of risk, end quote. It appears to be hand in hand with Intel, the maker of the big chips that they want to. Microsoft's been working with them for years. So they want to push us all to upgrade our hardware with a new laptop so we stay on the right side of risk. Oh, wow. So StatCounter.com advises that the current install base is 54% are still on Windows 10. Windows 11, still 3.5 years after release, they're at 45% as far as an adoption rate. Still, the Microsoft share at 64%, as opposed to Mac OS and Linux and all of those, it still isn't much lower than it was 5 years ago. People are still holding on to Windows 10. And last week, I did talk about the end of 10, endof10.org. And this is a big, huge effort to push people to Linux. This is, we can equate this to a grassroots effort because Linux, most people aren't paying for Linux. LibreOffice, which is a free product as well, joined up with them in this education effort, which is pushing the idea that there are alternatives to the Windows and Office stranglehold that has existed for years. Now, I'm going to encourage anyone to look in this direction. I'm going to also note that it's not for the faint of heart. if you have someone, if you're really intent on going in this direction, but you're not technologically savvy, if you have someone who knows the path ahead, however, once your system is set up and that transition is done, it's just as easy to work with and use for your tech needs. There are options, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the coming year plays out in these stats. Coming up next, Keith and I are going to be talking about WWDC 25, the big, huge Apple announcements, and there's a lot to that. So that'll be coming up next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Every time Apple has a major keynote, whether we're talking about WWDC or the various releases that they do in spring or fall, and they get together and they go, hey, we got a big thing. We're going to be talking in 2 weeks and all of that. We bring Keith on afterwards to talk about what they released. And I'm going to start off with my usual question that we even talked about this last week. Evolutionary or revolutionary?
I'm going to sidestep the question this go around, Benjamin.
Oh, man.
To tell you. Hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on. Because normally we talk about whether it's evolutionary or revolutionary. And we also sprinkle that with underwhelmed or excited.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part I want to focus on this go around. Because watching it, moment to moment, my level of excitement was modified. And okay. I will tell you that out of the gate,
yeah,
the one aspect of Apple software development that was actually most exciting for me this go-around was iOS for the iPhone. And what is really cool is their new liquid glass design. And I'll tell you why I'm really, really jazzed by this. Because it harkens back to Steve Jobs' original introduction of the Aqua interface of the original Mac OS X 10.0.
That goes back a little ways, yeah.
And having recently rewatched that keynote, there's a lot of overlap. And here we are 25 years later, and this is not a rehash, not a warm over, but a complete rethinking of that original interface.
Mm-hmm.
And they went a lot deeper. And the fact that not only is it for a single operating system, that it's not for a single operating system, but that it spreads across tvOS, macOS, which we'll dive deeper into as we converse about this.
It's a unified design aesthetic, which is what I think they actually needed, something like that, to really make it seamless between each of the different devices to bring it all to, hey, I'm dealing with an Apple device right now, and it shouldn't matter, but I'm dealing with an old Mac OS, not too old, a couple of versions back, but it feels different than my iPad. It feels different than my iPhone. Both of mm-hmm. them are close.
Right.
I get it.
So the liquid glass design is really exciting, and that's going to be one of the preeminent elements of iOS 26. And people are like, iOS 26, aren't we on 18 now? We're going to talk more about that as time goes by. But there's a couple of really cool features in iOS 26 that I'm actually jazzed about.
Okay.
Because when I'm on the road, when in between clients, I use that time for making phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really, really cool phone features that are really going to be helpful for me, because if I'm on hold, when I call someplace, there's a new feature called Hold Assist, where yes. rather than have to sit there and listen to the music and wait, it will basically, you put this call, you can put the call on hold while they've got you on hold, and then they'll notify you when a live agent picks up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's call screening, and with call screening, you've got the ability to find out who's calling you and why, and then see if you actually want to take the call. And I like that a lot.
Yes.
And so those are just a couple of the phone features. There's going to be live translation in messages, FaceTime, and the phone apps.
So live translation is something that I really want to speak to that for just a moment.
Sure.
That is exciting for me. Mm-hmm. I do not have any hearing loss. However, I really appreciate, because I'm very detail oriented about the words that people use, and I like to hone in and focus on what they're saying. So sometimes people kind of mumble, they'll drift off, and you miss a word. And my brain can fill it in, but people no longer speak with the level of attention to
articulation.
Exactly. And that frustrates me.
Mm-hmm.
Just be loud, be clear, make sure people understand what you're talking about.
Benjamin, let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
Just kind of, have you played at all with Apple's Image Playground in Mac OS Sequoia? Because this is a feature I can't stand.
No.
I think the graphics and the animation are oversaturated, hyper cartoony looking, and they are nothing I ever want to use. And Apple just added ChatGPT integration to kind of better hone your results. And I'm just like, why? I'm never going to use this feature. This is terrible.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on that. We've got to, we went from realistic to hyper realistic to cartoony mm-hmm. in a number of different directions. And I want it to look real. I don't want it to look pushed. I don't want it to look artificial. I want it to just feel like the real world.
Exactly. Now, one thing I did want to mention is Apple CarPlay. And we've been waiting for this CarPlay Ultra for a good long time. And Apple didn't say it, but everything that was rumored about it seems to be true, because the only three manufacturers that are offering CarPlay Ultra out of the gate are Aston Martin and two of my least favorite companies, Kia and Hyundai. And
they're aiming ridiculous. At two different markets. They're aiming at the high end and the low end.
And in the keynote, some woman comes on to talk about CarPlay Ultra, and they don't say it's going to be available first in Aston Martin. But what is she driving? an Aston Martin.
Yeah, yeah. I found it interesting that they said that they have a number signed on and there's more coming. And one of the ones that was named off in coming was General Motors, which has been very famously forward about ditching.
They want to do their own car thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a head scratcher for me on that one.
Yeah. Then there's watchOS, which we're wrapping up this segment, so we don't need a lot of time to talk about it. It's got Workout Buddy, and so basically it will talk to you and psych you up while you know, with compliments and affirmations while you're doing your workout.
I fast forwarded over that, but what you're describing to me reminds me of the Saturday Night Live sketch from whatever it was, Stuart 20 years Volley? Ago. No, no.
You're good enough.
No,
you're awesome enough.
No,
and gosh darn it, people like you.
No, it was two guys that were muscle bound, and we're going to pump you up.
Yeah,
I'm like, no. So I don't need my watch to cheer me on. That already sounds artificial.
You've increased your efficiency. But 10% over your last mile.
My efficiency. I'm not at work. I'm trying to do a workout, which is completely different things. I understand you're doing metrics on my pacing, but no. Anyways, for right now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Zedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. In just a moment, we're going to come back. We're going to dive deeper into WWDC 25.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. Microcenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, Microcenter is your resource. Check out Microcenter.com today. Microcenter.com.
The phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. I will answer your computer questions. Leave a message. If I don't answer, that's okay. I will get back to you, and I will address whatever your technology concerns are. Keith M. Zedor and I have been talking about WWDC 25, the big, huge Apple announcement that we get every June. Were a keynote, a series of announcements, and it was all software-based. Mm-hmm. There was absolutely no hardware referenced other than what the software runs on.
Correct. And, you know, again, we don't engage in speculative fiction here at Computer Talk Radio. That is to say, we don't, you know, dive into the rumor mill. But that having been said, we were kind of expecting that there wouldn't be any hardware updates.
Yeah.
The one thing that you and I were having a little banter on, and when you're friends with somebody for a decade, you get to banter with them.
Sure.
And you were quite insistent that the new Mac OS 26 was going to be called Lake Tahoe.
Yeah,
and I said,
no,
it's just going to be Tahoe.
That's because I've got friends who actually live at Lake Tahoe, and they don't refer to it as Tahoe. They refer to it as Lake Tahoe. They don't take the shortcut, which is, to me, seems like it's kind of bizarre, but yeah.
All right.
you know, I know all kinds of people who, you know, just shortcut whatever city they're in, and sometimes add in derogatory terms to it too. But yeah, oddly enough, they went with Tahoe. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing that's great about Tahoe is that it extends the liquid glass design further. It adds a phone app in so that there's phone mirroring. And there's already a little bit of that in modern iterations, but you can turn that off. Live translation. But one of the things that I noticed in doing a deeper dive this week, following the keynote, were things that weren't actually spoken about, and that Tahoe is still going to be compatible with Intel Max. But
yes, but famous for last year, though.
The brick wall is coming down, because while macOS 26 Tahoe will run on selected Intel Max next year.
Yeah.
macOS 27, whatever that's going to be called, will be Apple Silicon Max only.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing that's going to happen, because this is going to be a pivotal change, because Apple also said that even though they haven't made a time machine, time capsule, a hardware device, for many, many years, many of them out in the wild still work. As of 27, the time capsule will no longer work or be recognized by next year's operating system. So this Tahoe is the last version of macOS that will run a time machine backup onto an Apple time capsule device.
Yeah. Yeah. Just changing winds here, just moving on to different approaches, I think we kind of expected it to some extent. We expected that they would eventually, as they have for decades now, they deprecate the old hardware.
True. I'm actually surprised that so many of them have worked as long as they have, especially since they don't go beyond 802.11n and 802.11ac, depending upon how new your model is.
Sure.
But I've moved my clients over to Eero years ago, but it's kind of old news for me as an Apple consultant.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people and a lot of retro enthusiasts of Apple products love keeping these things going longer. But I didn't want to be remiss and not talk about tvOS on the Apple TV box. Because one feature that's really cool is that you can now have profiles. Now, you previously, on an app-by-app basis, like the YouTube app on Apple TV, you could have individual family member profiles, HBO Plus or HBO Max would let you do that. And this way, each person could have their Netflix would let you do it. But now you can actually have Apple TV profiles. So this way somebody logs into the device level and then their content is in there. And I think that's pretty neat, because we are big Apple TV box users in our house. We have one in the bedroom, one in the living room.
Now, I didn't follow any of that. I fast forwarded past all of that. Was that because of the fact that they're now enabling something much like Netflix did with age related profiles? So if you've got kids under 13, kids under 7, whatever, they get different content.
Well, you know what it is? I look at it like, you know, profiles on a computer, Mac or PC.
Sure.
You know, it's like you're a family. Sure, you could have everything under one roof. And imagine a house that didn't have rooms.
Just threw all your
stuff in the house. How do you differentiate whose stuff goes where? And with these profiles, basically you set it up, customize it the way you like it, and nobody else is poking around in your stuff, because when they log in, they're looking at their stuff.
Yeah.
So, what were any of the things that excited you, Benjamin?
I just mostly took it in. I think, for the most part, I didn't see anything that was exciting. I didn't see anything that was boring. I didn't consider this evolutionary or revolutionary. It was just it was somewhere in between. It just existed. I think the one thing that really threw me off, and I'll tell you, I felt it was too polished. I felt like there was, you know, when we first saw this during COVID, when we first saw them do this with the video, it was kind of cool. But it was so polished, it lacked any soul. It lacked any life. It was just people standing up there and reciting the perfect words with perfect hand signs and signals and clasps. And
well, I mean, at least when they did it during COVID, it was a great alternative to having everybody packed into a theater doing a live presentation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anyways, that's WWDC. We're going to continue a little bit more on this topic next week here on Computer Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. That's how you can reach out to us. Just give us a call. I will answer your phone if I'm available. If I'm not, leave a voicemail and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, you know, one of the things I did recently was I upgraded my last system, the most important one for me, over to Windows 11. This actually represents something that is very strange for me because I've been on the beta version of every operating system going back to Windows 3.1. And on my primary system. And I just put it off because I was that scared. And I ran into a number of different issues along the way. As we move closer, we're starting to hear about people like the Linux crowd. They're saying, hey, look at us over here. Let's go in this direction. The Mac folks are laughing uproariously. You know, you and I have not even delved into this topic in ages. What are your thoughts in regards to this progression towards Windows 11?
It's inevitable since Windows 10 support has been suspended by our friends at Microsoft.
Yes, yes.
So if you want to get updates, if you want to be safe, if you want things to keep working, and if you want the latest software to talk to your OS, it's kind of... you go or you never go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's something you have to do. And I had put together, as you know, a desk side system that might have had 15 drives in it. Yeah. I think it had a RAID 5, a RAID 6 array and backups for backups. It had a backup for the boot drive. It had backups for the data drive and it had a couple other drives in there. I have no idea what's still on there.
Tons of data.
I shut down one company 3 years ago, and it's probably got its entire database history. Who knows? It did not have the security chip that was necessary to do an upgrade to Windows 11.
Yes, the TPM 2.0. Yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, my choices were not upgrade unless I wanted to do a real scratch down to the motherboard. Mm-hmm. And in which case, expensive little things like the memory don't migrate.
Yeah.
Or replace. Now, you're well aware that the horsepower in notebook systems significantly better than it's ever been before.
It distinctly is. As a matter of fact, I'm arriving at the what I think of internally in my brain. I actually have surpassed the expiration date. I've made this my primary system last a little bit longer than I normally do because I've been trying to figure out Windows 12, which isn't coming anytime soon. So my next thought has been to go towards, of all things, a laptop, because this big, huge hunk of metal under my desk.
There's another part,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we always went with system units was our ability to connect a lot of stuff, to vary what's in there, to add to them. And a lot of that functionality we can now get in docks.
Yes. Yes. Very much so.
So I have what I got in, and we'll talk about this separately, is an expert book, an ASUS expert book, which is monstrously good. It's not terribly expensive. I think it's under $1,200, and it is able to do essentially everything I need because it's not trying to do it all inside a thin metal case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got two external drives connected to it, which total 6 terabytes, which is more than you're ever going to get inside one of these.
Yeah.
This particular model is a good value because it does not have an interactive screen. It's got a touchpad, and
okay.
Of course, I always add a keyboard. I always add a trackball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I won't say never. I seldom count on the built-in audio mic or camera.
Sure.
But I do it more now.
Yeah.
At any rate, my path for me from 10 to 11 had to be buying a Windows 11 system.
Mm-hmm.
And notebook was the best way to get that. And in looking at the various alternatives there, I ended up migrating to ASUS. We've had a lot of really good experience with their products in the last couple of years. They're phenomenal. Yeah. You know, not that there's anything wrong with the other guys. I just, among other things, try to avoid things like bundleware that's a hallmark of so many brands.
Yes.
Yeah. So it as long as you don't care how thin a biscuit your USB ports are on, be grateful that you now have Thunderbolt 4, sometimes Thunderbolt 5 coming out of them. Mm-hmm. That means you've got up to, depending on the model you get, up to 40 gigabits per second of communication with any number of things in bidirectional context. It means you can add all the drives, all the peripherals you want. You can put in your SD cards. You can... You're not stuck with the notebook screen. You can add as many as 5-6 monitors, depending on the configuration you're dealing with.
Yes.
I would need more eyes. It's a good thing. Anybody now stuck in the 10 to 11, I would suggest go ahead with it. The only thing I'd suggest you keep an eye on to decide when to do it is how your end user pricing varies with the uncertainty of tariffs.
Yeah. I'm going to throw one more in. Remember to set aside and know that you're going to spend 4 hours post migration doing all the configuration and tweaking.
4 days for me, buddy.
There you go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com.
site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can, and they have all kinds of different tricks up their sleeve. Jane reached out with a question, why is my grandma getting so many scam calls all of a sudden? And I'll tell you, it is very similar to a situation that I'm going to line it up like this. I go out to this park every once in a while, and they've got a koi pond there. And I will throw out little bits of breadcrumbs out there. And they will start showing up. One breadcrumb, I get one fish. I throw out a second one, all of a sudden there's three of them. I throw out another one and there's five of them. I throw out a couple more and all of the fish have wound up in front of me. See, scammers, once they achieve it once they manage to get somebody hooked, just like fishing, just like I hooked all of those. Well, I didn't really hook the koi. I attracted them in like I could go fishing there, but I'm not going to go fishing in the koi pond. But those bad guys do that. Once they get one of those fish hooked, whoa, what are they going to do? They're going to leverage that as best they can. But they also know that they now have a valuable target. They found that fish. They found that person who's willing to put out some more money for whatever other issue out there. They share lists of vulnerable targets. No, forget sharing lists of vulnerable targets. They sell lists. And they also do a number of auto dials. They will send out robocalls, and those robocalls auto-dial millions of numbers, and those who pick up go on more lists. So these lists all get compiled to each other. So you're on list A, you're on list B, you're on list D, E, and F. They all of a sudden realize, hey, you're showing up a lot. Let's focus even more on you. And this is not a good thing. This is a really scary and yet also sad thing. Seniors have long been especially targeted for a variety of these different scams, whatever it is. And that's because the older folks are more willing to trust people, more willing to just send a few dollars. They have some expendable income at times. They figure what's the worst that can happen. And they get lured in. Look, do not, whatever you do, do not give out money to people you don't know. Don't even give out money to people you do know. Do not wind up in a situation where anybody is going to say, look, we can take you for some cash. They're not going to tell that directly to you. They're not going to directly say, hey, I'm going to scam you. I'm going to take all of your money and then disappear. That's not how it works. So you need to be very careful. In this case, Jane, you need to sit down with your grandmother and say, look, you need to understand almost everybody out there that's going to talk to you has a potential to be a scammer. Even all of these different impersonation scams, even though you think it's coming from me and I call up and I say, hey, I need to borrow some money. No, if I need to borrow money, I'm coming in person. I wish you the best. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Can't find out what to buy at the computer store? Benjamin Rockwell's got the answer. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That is just one way to reach out to us. Of course, we have the podcast there, and you can ask us questions. But if you want to ask us questions in person, you can always phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373-888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, one of the things that's been around, we've talked about this. I remember back when we used to refer to it as the information superhighway, but we've gotten away from that term. We've gone so far away from that term. And yet, I still enjoy that term.
Yeah, well, so do I, because it's so expressive of what actually is out there.
Yeah.
And your ability to go out onto the internet and learn things. I mean, things that, you know, I used to always watch the TED Talks.
Okay.
Because I got...
You still do, though, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, all right.
Okay. But, you know, it was the whole idea of being able to see other people's ideas about subjects that I had never thought about.
For anybody who doesn't know what a TED Talk is, it's technology, entertainment, and design. And they bring in a variety of people, and they are told that they have 20 minutes to give the speech of their lives. And that's kind of how it's framed, but some of the folks that they bring in are absolutely brilliant people that you've heard their names before. I know Bill Gates has done it. I'm sure Elon Musk somewhere along the way has done that.
Probably.
Mark Zuckerberg, but also a lot of other brilliant people along the way. And they go in a number of different directions, whether we're talking about music. Some of the ones I've heard were on music. There was one of my favorite ones actually was of a guy saying, and rightfully so, when you pick it apart, he's absolutely right in that we all tie our shoes incorrectly. I'll let you go chase after that one. It's absolutely fascinating from a scientific point of view. He's right.
Yes.
Amazingly right. Anyways, sorry, I took a little detour on that
like I was watching a program and this woman was talking about Fireflies.
Okay.
Now,
There's a little spark of information we need.
Right there. but she was talking about it in a clinical way versus a amusing way.
Okay.
Because we used to always catch fireflies.
Okay.
Why do they flash light and some of fireflies don't?
I never really, growing up, I was in Southern California. We didn't have fireflies. So I am aware of their existence, but only because on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland, they had a representation of the South and fireflies there. That's read about it in books.
Read about
it. Go on. Sorry.
I experienced it as a kid.
Okay.
And all growing up. But anyway, that kind of information is out there. And you can learn things. And you can see how people express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in the internet expanse of information, you have to be discerning.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by discerning? In other words, you have to take into consideration the bias that the information is being presented.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yes.
Because not everybody is totally clinical in what they're saying, and some people have a lot of imagination about certain facts.
Mm-hmm.
About history, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in how you view the information. Okay.
Sure.
But it's all out there. There's also whole websites, like we used to talk about Khan Academy, that teach people basically mathematics and mm-hmm. other thing, mm-hmm. other subjects, in a very stepwise manner. And that, too, is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And different websites, you know, do the same thing. But the access to all this information is the information superhighway.
Yeah. And yeah. There is, yeah, so much out there.
Yeah. And so I want our listeners basically to say, what can I learn that I have a modicum of interest in that's out there?
Yes.
And then go explore.
This is one of the things that I actually have enjoyed doing. I will go and I will chase down all kinds of rabbit holes. and it is in a quest to further expand my mind in regards to technology, to music, to whatever it is that might be out there. And yes, I am so fond of the ability to plug into the just vast expanse of information out there. It is far better than going and getting lost in YouTube videos or Facebook Reels or TikTok or whatever it is.
Whatever.
A lot of the videos out there aren't as informative. I do find that I wind up on, if I'm on YouTube, and I do venture to YouTube on occasion, but I tend towards a lot of more unique items, usually more educational rather than mind-numbing, rather than the silliness, the stupid pet tricks and stuff like that that people do. I
stay away from that, too. When I go out there, I'm usually going out there to listen to music or read a book,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which YouTube's really good at.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But, you know, because I, like you, I'm always interested in music,
mm-hmm.
and all different kinds of music.
Yeah.
My musical interest is very eclectic.
Yes. Yes. And I understand that because I am also in that same realm. I do enjoy going off in different directions. My latest direction is there's this ensemble, I guess is the best way to refer to it, called Snarky Puppy, and they play jazz, and they are so fun to listen to.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I go in a number of different directions with music.
And so, I also love a lot of other kinds of things out there.
Yeah.
And not only the music, but I go get into history, and all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah, yeah. So if there was one thing that you would say you don't like on the information superhighway, what would you? Which direction would you go in?
Well, I've tended to stay away from social media.
Okay.
I also stay away from politics.
Okay.
And I stay away from religion.
Okay.
Which are all there if you want to, but I tend to stay away from those things.
The latter two tend to be, they can be, if you in various areas, divisive. The social media is usually the divisive platform where so many people do square off against each other, where they do run into a number of different issues. And as much as it was supposed to be finding your friends, making new friends, I'm not so sure that we really wound up where we should have, that we really followed the initial goals and desires and demands for all of that. And instead, we wound up with garbage. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. This next topic is not based off of any one particular contact to me. It isn't just a matter of one person reaching out to me, but it's something that I've had to say many times across the last year, across the last 15 years, across the entirety of my career. And it is this: do not let tech failures define you and your interaction with technology. I will tell you right up front, I have had many tech failures throughout my life. We've all been there. We've all stared down at a cracked screen, or we've smelled the scent of toasted circuitry still fresh in the air. Or we've frantically Googled data recovery services like they're some kind of just amazing lifeline. Here's the truth. Everybody in IT that is worth their salt has their own personal graveyard of gadgets and ghost stories of near catastrophes or actual catastrophes. This is, I am no different from anybody else out there. I have had a number of different tech failures that just rattled me for a little bit, and then I had to move on. I want to think about some of these here for a moment. I dropped a laptop. I've dropped a couple of laptops over the years, just putting them into a dead state. iPad as well. And that sudden jolt reminds us each time that our digital lives are truly fragile. And yes, I mean, we can take a lesson from that. Don't trust gravity, or rather, don't forget about gravity, I guess. That's kind of the way to go with that one. I had a coffee-laced keyboard. Somebody spilled coffee into my laptop keyboard. And there is nothing like a latte to short out your flow state. I just amazing stuff. There's a learning there. Keep all kinds of hydration and hardware apart from each other. And it isn't the first time, and it isn't going to be the last time that I had experienced that across my career thus far. I've had a smoked desktop from a failed video card, just a GPU that went out in a blaze of glory. Yes, it was dramatic, and it stunk up the room. But it's also a lesson in ventilation. It's a lesson to just always be prepared. I dropped a phone. That's another one. I was running along and I dropped it was pre-smartphone days. It was just a regular cell phone. And it was a literal stumble. And yeah, I had to go through just some hoops to get that taken care of. I also had a hard drive meltdown before CES, and I still to this day, I must admit, I do kick myself. I don't let it define me, but I do take a lot of learning from that. Timing is everything, and so is backing up twice, three times. Put your data in so many different areas to protect yourself. Look, from all of this, I will tell you that tech failures sting. Sometimes it's a little easier. Sometimes it's harder. They will break your rhythm. They will wreck your plans. They will sometimes momentarily erase your localized digital self. But they all, each, offer something that is priceless. And that is an opportunity to learn, an invitation to grow. This is something to just, I don't want to say embrace like it's good, but I want to say that you have to embrace it and move on. You have to accept it and move on. I guess that's a better wording there. It's easy to view tech as the backbone of our productivity. It is equally easy to think of it as our identity. And when it crumbles, we get that reminder that you and I are not the device. We are the constant in this. The real skill along the way that you need to accept, to take on, and learn from is that this doesn't lie in preventing every failure. I mean, you can't prevent everything. Most of those items, there was nothing I could do to stop them. I can't change the law of gravity. The coffee, my laptop was on it was 70 feet away from me. Somebody else spilled the coffee. Look, these are things that were outside of my control. But I do need to, we all need to expect some level of turbulence in our lives. There are going to be unpredictable things that happen. When that happens, you keep your balance. And you have to adjust your situation and adjust, like keeping with the turbulence and the balance, you adjust your trajectory midair. Whether it's a fried video card or that spilled drink or that phone that I dropped, whatever it is, recovery begins with mindset. And that means we need to pause. We need to breathe. We need to take in the situation. We have to ask, what now? Now, I mean, so often we go, why me? Why me? Why did this happen to me? No, put that aside. What now? What are you going to do? And you have to address a couple of things for that. You have to address the immediate situation, but you then have to start off with what can you do to prevent it in the future? Okay, so we start off with adapting. Can I switch to another device? Can I repurpose old hardware? Can I lean on the cloud until repairs are made? Thinking on your feet like this is just as vital in the digital age as knowing how to reboot. Okay, so then we deal with the adapting. We get back on track. Next up, we need to think about preparedness. Backups. I preach backups all the time. They are not some level of paranoia. They are all practical. Murphy's Law exists, has existed since as far back as anybody can remember. And then even then some. It's been around for so long. And Murphy's Law says anything that can go wrong will go wrong. So yes, You have to prepare with backups. You have to have redundancy. Redundancy isn't a weakness. It's resilience. We have to create ideas and approaches and systems that reduce any fallout when things inevitably break because of, again, Murphy's Law. Last up, after you come out of this, after you have dealt with whatever tech that you've dropped, whatever you've spilled on it, whatever is caught fire, whatever it is, you need to build some emotional resilience. You need to just start thinking about all of what happened, and you need to realize that mistakes, accidents, disasters, these do not define you. They don't define your capability. They refine it. So you need to allow yourself. Yes, you need to allow yourself some frustration, but then you need to channel that frustration, that energy, translating it into smarter habits, better processes, improved foresight. Over time, every one of these things becomes a part of a breadcrumb trail towards growth, your growth. Recovery isn't just about fixing the tech. It isn't about preparing for next time. It's building a life where setback is just a scene. Not the entire plot line of the big, huge story, but just that one small little moment in the movie. How you handle things along the way, as they break, as they fall apart, whatever, is going to help you become a better person in the future. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Savannah reached out with a question: how do streaming services like Netflix ensure smooth playback during high traffic periods? Of course, you can reach out to me with your computer questions, your technology concerns. It's computertalkradio.com. That's the best place to reach out to me. Leave a nice detailed email, if you will, to me. It's on the form there. Contact us today. I will get back to you. I get back with everybody in regards to all of the questions they throw at me. So let's dive into Savannah's question. Savannah asks, how do streaming services like Netflix ensure smooth playback during high traffic periods? And I want you to think about this. I want you to imagine a popular restaurant, and it's during the dinner rush. In order to serve customers efficiently, they may prepare certain dishes in advance. Similarly, all of the streaming services have constantly been looking for ways and strategies to handle high demand. It is not efficient for them to have all of their information in one sole spot, and then for all of the different people looking for movies and all of this to reach all the way across the internet, way, 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 thousands of miles away, and all of that information wind its way all the way back. they're going to shift things around. And there's a number of different ways that they do this. One of the things that they do is content delivery networks, both a matter of internal but also external items. And what this is this is – so I've got a content delivery network that buffers a lot of the information for Computer Talk Radio. If you reach out to computertalkradio.com, it will look at the information you're looking for. And if nobody's touched it in the last hour, it'll grab it from the official source, the website. But if it if it's been only 5 minutes, it's going to give you the initial web page or whatever other information you pull from the site, and it's just going to bring it to you a lot faster because it is that buffer point. It's distributed content that is across multiple servers around the world, and the whole point is to reduce what we call latency, the amount of time that it takes for all of that information to move across. Now, they also do a lot of adaptive streaming. And what adaptive streaming is, where it adjusts video quality in real time based upon your bandwidth. And they do that to intentionally prevent buffering. They're going to send some information out to you in advance, and they will try to move that towards you. So that you can suffer a few different errors, you can suffer a 5 second momentary internet blip, and you'll still see this seamlessly. It also will load up the information so that some of that video quality will go down, but they'll still be able to send you that information all the time. Now, they may store, Netflix actually was one of the first ones to do this, and this is kind of similar to that content delivery network, and that is where they're storing it locally, and they are storing that information at your internet service provider. A lot of the different major internet service providers have space on their server racks to send you some of the popular Netflix movies. They're just shifting the data over to the local, whoever it is you're using for your internet service provider, and they'll put some of those movies right there, and then you don't have to worry about, and neither does the internet service provider, any kind of internet-wide outages. And this is a great thing. This is something that is kind of against what you might hear of as net neutrality, but it is something that has been around for a long time. Netflix struck up a lot of deals because they wanted to provide better service to as many people as they could. And yes, there are going to be people who are going to have better service because those servers, those Netflix servers, sit inside of your internet service provider's server room, their location. And that's actually good. There is a certain level of load balancing that happens as well. And what that means is if you go to one of the most popular movies that may be existing on Netflix, and I'm not going to name any particular ones, but you go to one of the most popular ones, they may not have it just sitting on one server. They may say, okay, we've got 50 servers scattered across the country. We're going to have you grab it from this server that's close to you. No, that one's all full. We've got a bunch of people there, so we're going to load balance. We're going to shift it to you a couple of cities away. Perfectly fine. We're going to have you grab it from over there instead of the closest one because there's only 5 users downloading it from there versus 105 in your local one, whatever it is. And yes, they do a lot of compression. They do a lot of different tweaks and adjustments all the way through. Again, sometimes these affect quality, sometimes they don't. But this is something that they've done all the way along. And then, yes, they are doing a lot of predictive analytics. They're anticipating these demand patterns and these shifts, and they work to allocate all of these resources proactively. And this is going across, whether we're talking about Netflix or we're talking about the Disney set, we're talking about Paramount, or we're talking Amazon Prime or whatever. All of these folks have their own setups. They do have a variety of different internal tricks that may differ from some of the other platforms. And that's why you may find that you go to, and I'm just going to say Streamer X. You go to Streamer X and it's working just fine. You go to Streamer Y and it's kind of laggy. It's kind of slow. And it's going to vary. It's going to adjust. And they're going to shift these things around. And yes, sometimes local distribution points for some of these internet streamers are going to be less efficient, less great for a longer period of time, just because they're constantly trying to provide the best viewing experience across the country and not always focusing just on the local ones. By doing this, by preparing this and distributing it efficiently, they are looking to have the best experience for everyone that they can, or at least the most that they can. And it's kind of an interesting thing to do a deeper dive into. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and so much more. And Isaac had a question: why does it seem so long for some tech issues to get resolved, even when they seem small to me? And I get this. And I there's all kinds of different things that are going on in IT, and there are a number of different factors that are going to roll into this. And it is something like calling a locksmith for a stuck door. It seems simple from the outside, and yet there might be some very hidden implications inside the overall mechanism. And that overall mechanism is the entire corporation. Let's start off with the big one, and that is information technology goes through, and they will triage based upon overall impact, not just the visibility of one particular person, even an important person, even something which you feel is very important. A small printer issue is a perfect example here. And it has to be prioritized in amongst so many different things. I remember somebody reached out to me once and they said, hey, I can't print. Well, there's a bigger problem at hand right now. The servers are currently down. Well, I still can't print. I get that. But the entire company is down. We have problems bigger than your printing issue at the moment. No offense. I will get back to you. I will come back to you here in a short while. But I need to make sure that everybody can access our hard drive out on the network. And this is something that people have a big battle with. And they don't realize that some of these smallest issues are going to have to be on hold until we tackle the medium-sized and the big-sized issues. If there's a company-wide issue or a regional issue or something that is just part of the bigger picture, we're going to deal with biggest picture first and then move on down through all of these other items. Next up, there are very intermittent issues. And these intermittent issues are going to also take a lot of time to resolve. Sometimes, every once in a while, I can't print a PDF from my system. And this is something, you know, somebody might come to me with. And, okay, I can look at that. But if it's only every once in a while, you need to reach out to me when that's happening. And I can look at what is going on at that particular moment. Frequently, we will be called out. Information technology will be aware of this issue that happens once every 3 weeks. Okay, but if it happens only once every 3 weeks and it only happens for an hour, we have to schedule and be there during that hour. We have to also know that it's only happening during that hour. So one of the things that I frequently will ask people, hey, is the issue happening right now? Okay, so this is a time when I can come on out and I can take care of it. Oh, it's not happening right now. It's only happening once in a while. Well, I need you to reach out to me when it's happening, and then we can look at everything then. So there's all of these different things that are just winding up, putting that fix off, because it's just going to happen like that. And there are a lot of different issues that may factor into this as well. There are background dependencies, and we may say, you know what, we need to have you reboot your system. We may need to have you just try that first. And I had somebody reach out to me. Oh, my computer is acting up. I know when I reboot it, it goes away. But I don't want to reboot my system right now. I want you to come on out and fix it. That's not always a practical thing. See, when we have technicians lined up, we have a series of technicians in a company, and it all depends on the size of the company. I do know that for a long time, 11 years, I worked as the sole in-house nerd. Everything. I did everything from A to Z that was even nerd-related. So sometimes I'd say, look, reboot this time. Even reboot next time. Let me know when it's happening each time. You know that a reboot fixes it. Now, reboot, we know that it fixes it because this is something that happens all the time. The system just goes into whatever direction it's going to go in, where it breaks whatever functionality, and it puts us on pause. All right, so reboot the system. That's okay. Over the course of time, we will get to it, and we will try a number of different things. Some of these different issues do take time to solve. The more mysterious it is, even as annoying as it might be, the harder it is going to be for some folks to tackle that. So I will tell you, one of the best things to do is work out an arrangement with the techs. Say, look, I'm bringing this to your attention. I know that a reboot will solve this. I'm going to go ahead and reboot it this time. But let's keep track of that. If you could keep track of it, and I'll keep track of it, we'll do this together. We'll see if we can find the commonality between when I have to reboot and when it works, and all of that. And you've got to track this. This is all about documentation. This is all about testing. And a lot of the different things that we might do as technicians, as far as repairing, we're not going to have the perfect solution the first time out. So we have to test these. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. Let's reboot it. And if it goes away, great for now. But let's keep track of it. Let's treat this over the long haul. Sometimes a simple problem is just like a stuck zipper. Getting it free without breaking the whole thing takes care and time. And in the workplace, cooperation. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Lily reached out to me. You can do it too. Go ahead and give me a call at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. So Lily's question, why do websites keep asking me to prove that I'm not a robot? And I get it. we are deluged with this. And it's like being carded every time you walk into your own house. It is annoying and it is almost 100% unnecessary. Well, maybe not 100%. And there is a lot behind the whole idea of why they run CAPTCHA. And that's the computer automated Turing something test. Basically, it's there. It is designed to make sure that you are a person. And there's a lot of different things that happen along the way when you see this. Websites want to make sure you're not going to spam them. So every time you send an email to any website, they're going to ask you to prove that you're not a robot. That is a way for them to keep spam out. A lot of purchasing sites, they're going to do the same because they don't want these bots to come along, and we consider them robots, and they're automated tools that may be wandering around and checking the prices of various different products. Amazon doesn't have a problem with it. They want to show up as the lowest price. Other sites, maybe they're set up so that they don't want the bots going through. And this is all going to vary. And they're looking to essentially prove that you are human. And there's a lot of different reasons for this. There's a number of different ways where traffic just might just not seem as trustworthy. It depends on your IP address. It depends on your browser settings. If you don't have certain things enabled in your browser, it might say, this isn't normal. And they are also just going through and trying to figure out if for whatever reason, if you are you, if you are human. Look, I would suggest if you want to avoid it, stop surfing the internet. I know that's a bad thing to say, but no, you might want to check your settings within your browser. You might want to check and make sure that you are not blocking cookies. You're not running in any of these incognito / private modes. Those are going to interfere with some of this. You want to also perhaps just make sure you don't have any add-ons that are blocking what's going on. I'll tell you, a lot of these pop-up ad blockers, they are also kind of disguising what the behavior is on your side and what your computer does and all of that. And that may be triggering these websites and maybe setting them up to ask you, hey, are you real? Hey, are you really real? Yeah, all of it's annoying, but it's also not going to be going away, and that's kind of sad. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the radio Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.